Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
Always locked on heat. Biscayne, South Beach. Goldberg and Ramil. Talking heat, body chill. Got the stats in the news. Got the facts and the views. Never know what they gon' say. Mailbag on a Monday. Pat Riles got the pack ride. Coach Bo got the know-how. Three bands in the raps now. Heat Nation, that's a packed house. Heat talk at the game time. Heat talk every day. I'm always locked on heat. Got it locked.
Locked on Heat hosts, Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked on Heat, part of the Locked on Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil, and we are opening up the mailbag today. Thank you to everybody that sent questions either via email or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Let's get to our first question, this one from Billy Kuhn. He asks, should we be worried about the Miami Heat's preseason troubles, excluding Dragic because of his EuroLeague rest, Hassan Whiteside, Tyler Johnson, Roddy Magruder, and Josh Richardson? I've been very underwhelmed by the rest of the Heat. I expected more from James Johnson, Waiters, Winslow, Ellington, and Olynyk. Their stat lines have worried me, especially Dion, and I'll be honest, the 11:30 Heat were hard to watch last season, and there were many games where I turned it off after the first half because I knew the game was already lost. This team has been reminiscent to that version of last year's Heat team. So, David, are you worried? Should we be worried about the Heat's preseason struggles?
Well, first of all, I got to say shame on you, Billy, for shutting off those terrible games during the 11:30 stretch. I mean, that is not what fandom is all about. You stick it out. You watch those horrible games where Luke Babbitt goes 0 of 3 and finishes with 2 rebounds and an assist, and you enjoy every second of that torture. As far as this year's
I really, do you remember our podcast after the
they were dire. They were pretty dreary. I'll be honest with you. We were even us, who's ostensibly getting paid to cover these games and to report on them, was a struggle. There were moments there, but we did it because that's how dedicated we are, and we knew we had to provide quality content for our listeners.
Sure. I may have skipped a Saturday game here and there, though.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so as far as this year's preseason, it's the preseason. It's just like saying, do we put too much stock in what happens in Summer League? You take all those games with a proverbial grain of salt. Some things happen during preseason and summer league that don't count during the regular season. You know, Eric Spoelstra is rotating his lineups 5 at a time on some occasions there, where he switches the starters out, brings in 5 guys off the bench. That's not going to happen during the regular season. You know, like you mentioned, Billy, you know, Goran Dragic is sitting out. So he's going to be playing more minutes. He's obviously, or probably the team's best player. So the more minutes he plays, the better the Heat will look overall. Other players have to get round into form. And I think that's what we're saying. Look, it's a much more different preseason than it has been in years past, in the sense that it's shorter, less games, less time for these teams to practice together and figure out a way to gel. I think we're going to start to see more evidence of this kind of gelling taking place as the regular season begins. I'm still confident, although a little bit more cautiously optimistic than I was, about Spoelstra's ability to get everybody to gel and figure out the chemistry that was evident in the second half of last season. But I think we'll see more of it as the regular season progresses.
I mean, you're saying things like Spoelstra's going to figure out how to get this team to gel. You know, wasn't that supposed to be the strength of this team, was that we didn't have to go through that awkward process again? You're turning the same team, basically. The continuity was supposed to be the number one advantage, and it just seems like that's not there. I am a little worried about the Heat after these 3 preseason games. I understand that, you know, you lose your starting power forward, Luke Babbitt, and you want to replace that person with a better player in James Johnson. You're trying to incorporate Kelly Olynyk, and you're trying to, and look, I get it, in the fourth quarter, you're playing some of these young guys. You're playing Bam. You're playing Jordan Mickey. And I'm not concerned about the fourth quarter, but this team doesn't look good in the first quarter. This team doesn't look good in the first 5 minutes when the starters are in. Spoelstra hasn't been happy with the starters. I am a little concerned with it. They're missing a lot of shots at the rim, which is reminiscent of that 11-30 team. That 11-30 team missed a lot of shots at the rim, and this Heat team is doing the same thing. Now, I don't know if that's because of conditioning, but again, that's supposed to be a strength of this team. And there's the shot selection has been bad, and the ball movement has not been good either. I've got some stats here. They have attempted 33.6% of their total shots in the paint. That's almost last in the NBA during the preseason. They're number one in mid-range attempts. 23.4%, almost a quarter of their attempts have been mid-range attempts. That's not good. We know that that's the least efficient shot in the NBA. And it does seem, watching the games, that they're settling for those mid-range attempts. They're not forcing the issue. They're not making the extra pass to turn that into a three-pointer. And in threes, only 24% of their shots have been threes. That's almost last in the NBA. And they've also only 51% of their made field goals have been assisted, which is, and only the Sacramento Kings have made fewer assisted shots. So they are forcing shots. They're trying to play off the dribble. They're not passing the ball well. And that was supposed to be a strength of this team, was the ball movement, that motion offense that Spoelstra incorporated last season. It's not there. I understand it's preseason. I get it. But I felt like that's what training camp was going to be for, especially when you're returning basically the same roster.
Right.
And I disagree with Billy. I've been very impressed with Kelly Olynyk, but everybody else, not so much. And I don't think that could be blamed on Olynyk's addition. I think he's helped. He's been one of the bright spots of this preseason. What worries me is that the continuity and the ball movement, the two things that were supposed to be there, that were number one advantages for the Heat going into the season, aren't there, and that's why I'm concerned.
Well, you know who else is 1-2 the preseason? The Golden State Warriors. And I don't think there's any concerns about their record.
I know, but that's because they're gonna win 70 games. That's because they've got Kevin Durant. They've got several All-Stars. The Heat don't have one All-Star. That's not a fair comparison.
Maybe, but we're talking about the record during the preseason and things that we see during the preseason. I don't know if players will be willing to take it up a notch. You know, their last game of the season is, what, Friday? I think their last preseason game is this upcoming Friday. They still have another 5 or 6 days before the regular season opener against the Orlando Magic. It'll give them a chance to practice, to fine-tune things that maybe needed to be worked on during training camp. They didn't have much of an opportunity to do so because of the shorter preseason. Mm-hmm. The Brooklyn Nets are 3-0. The Indiana Pacers are 2-0. I mean, teams are going to play differently during the preseason than they do during the regular season. And I'm not worried. Now, if we're 10 games into the regular season and a lot of those things that you pointed out, the mid-range shots, the poor defense, the lack of continuity are still evident, then yeah, it's time to get worried. And I don't know if there's any kind of quick fixes there, because I don't think there's anybody on the roster to step up and save us. But I wouldn't be worried until that's the reality, and right now it isn't.
I think James Johnson has really struggled. His early foul trouble hasn't helped things. If he could step it up, I think a lot of these issues are fixed. But if the team is playing like this, I'm not going to be too worried. I'm not panicking, right? I haven't hit that button yet. But if this team is playing like this by the end of the week, you know, they've got a couple preseason games this week. If they're playing like this the next few games, I'll start to get a little bit more worried. I'm willing to just see it out for now. But during the regular season, you're going to want to make sure that you have tickets for the Heat. And the only way to do that is by using SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts used to be complicated, but with SeatGeek, there's a simpler way to buy. They are the smartest, easiest way to get the tickets to live events that you want to see. SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience helps you buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team in person. SeatGeek will help you get you closer to the action for a great value. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way that I found to shop for tickets. I could be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. everything's with a few taps now on your cell phone. I don't know why you would do anything else. You know what I just downloaded too? I'll talk about it after. I got Uber Eats.
Oh yeah. And it's your wings.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so you don't have to deal with anybody.
I don't have to deal with anybody anymore. SeatGeek, you don't have to SeatGeek, you don't have to talk to anybody on the phone. There used to be days where you have to go to a box office and talk to a human. No. Ugh. No more of that. SeatGeek, you could just be in your underwear or naked, eating wings from Uber Eats, and just, you know what? I want to go to the Heat game Tuesday night. Buy some tickets right there. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to price compare for you. They find you amazing deals, and they help you get the most bang for your buck by grading every ticket based on its value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you could shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app on your phone, enter the promo code LONBA, that's promo code LONBA, and you can get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. I don't know what, we've been reading this for a long time. If this is your first SeatGeek purchase, I don't know what you're doing. You get on that train quickly.
I'm a little concerned about that imagery there. I'd like to think that our listeners are a little bit more sophisticated to sit there on their couch half naked, covered in wing sauce, ordering tickets on their phone.
They're as sophisticated as one of their hosts, I think. That may or may not have happened this weekend. All right, Chris Leach asks, any chance that the Heat take a matchup-by-matchup approach with Kelly Olynyk and James Johnson at the four? By the way, Chris, frequent mailbagger, used the hashtag AskLOHeat to ask that question. So thanks, Chris.
Absolutely. Good job using that, the hashtag. And as far as the question is concerned, it's an interesting one. Look, as you pointed out before, Olynyk started the second preseason game there, so it's a different little lineup that Spoelstra fielded. I'm going to have to go and say that there's no chance that this would happen. I think players thrive so much on continuity, whether it's just coming off the bench, whether it's starting, whether it's coming in at certain times in the second quarter. They want to know when they're coming in, and it gives them the opportunity to kind of get a feel for it and prepare for it physically and kind of get their rhythms going in the right pace. And I don't think that a guy like Spoelstra, who's finally attuned to that sort of thing, is going to make those kinds of changes. And especially Spoelstra, a guy who's been so consistent with, if a starter goes down, he'd rather not promote somebody that he counts on as his sixth man, just so he can keep that continuity in place. He'd rather move to somebody further down the line and kind of start them over, the way that Roddy Magruder wound up starting when Winslow got hurt. So I don't think that that's likely to happen, where they would say one night, JJ, you go in there, you can handle this guy a little bit better than Kelly. Kelly, tonight's the night for you to stretch the floor a little bit. We want some of your passing out there today. You start. I think that jerks them around too much. Yep. Doesn't let them get into any kind of comfortable rhythm. And I don't think Spoelstra's kind of coach to do that.
And just in a general NBA sense, that's typically a thing coaches might do in the playoffs if there's a specific matchup where you're playing somebody.
You have a chance in a 7-game series to make that adjustment.
Yeah, exactly. So I could see that maybe being – but in the regular season, teams are more concerned about their own teams more so than the opponent. Just there's not a lot of time to scout opponents as much and to make those adjustments. So you typically just try, like you said, to get into a rhythm and establish some continuity. I'll say this, though. I think that – depending on the matchup, Spoelstra might put Olynyk in the four at some point during the rotation, at some point during the game. I could see that certainly happening, putting Olynyk and Whiteside next to each other at certain points. And and then in certain games, not doing that at all, right? Like, I could see that maybe being the case, because Spoelstra is known, you're right, he likes to keep the same basic rotation the same, but he's known to try different lineups during the season, depending on a matchup. I think he'll experiment with that a few times during the regular season, especially depending on the matchup. But in general, you're 100% right. I think James Johnson is likely the starter. Even though he has struggled, I still think he's likely the starter, just because Olynyk, it does seem like his value is, there's more value to him coming off the bench as a backup five and an occasional four.
Now, you watched that preseason game where Olynyk started.
Yeah.
What was it that you saw from there that might have been something that Chris was curious about, perhaps?
Game that he felt that they had more of that Miami Heat basketball identity after the game. Uh-huh. I think that was because of Kelly Olynyk's passing, which is a thing that James Johnson does well and relishes doing. Like one of the, he's told me in the past, his favorite thing to do is just is to set up teammates. It's right. just that James Johnson has been getting into so much foul trouble early in games that in his first two starts during the first two preseason games, he got into foul trouble early, and I think that limited how aggressive he can be because he does like to drive and kick. That's kind of his style of facilitation. And he didn't really get a chance to do that. And in that third game, Olynyk is more of a standing passer, right? He likes to go at that triple threat position at the elbow and just using his height and his length, just kind of, you know, seek out cutting teammates and stuff like that. So there's less of an opportunity to draw offensive fouls or something like that. So I think there was some of that there. Olynyk has a steadying influence on the lineup, and I think that was present during that third preseason game. I don't want to read too much into it. All right, next question comes from Jeff Nicholas, also via Twitter. Is the idea that Justice Winslow is a defensive liability at the four being wildly overstated by the fans? It reminds me a little of how people didn't get Chris Bosh's impact at the five. Interesting comparison.
Yeah.
So Winslow, you know, during the preseason has been coming off the bench behind James Johnson as a small ball four.
I haven't seen any kind of the blowback from fans. Now, that might be that I'm just not particularly tuned in or that I haven't been aware of it. I know there are going to be moments there where he struggles possibly defensively, but I think Winslow is more than equipped to handle the kind of, you know, upsizing as far as, you know, guarding power forwards in today's game. He's strong enough. He's quick enough to make that adjustment. You know, if he's not doing it at the same level he was as a rookie, it might be because he's more attunely aware of, you know, the kind of wear and tear that it puts on a young person's body. And I think that's a concern for, you know, we see guys around the league being concerned about having to try to guard bigger players. You know, Paul George was resistant to handle the four in Indiana, partly because of the kind of wear and tear it would put on his body after having, you know, injured himself so severely. Carmelo Anthony for years was resistant to handling the power forward spot. It's one thing for him to be the power forward offensively, but defensively he wasn't willing to undergo that kind of pressure. And even LeBron James, a guy who is one of the most impressive physical specimens in NBA history, you know, the benefit of having Shane Battier here was the fact that he could guard power forwards, allowing LeBron to slide over to the three, and then offensively he would switch back. So, I don't know. I haven't seen anything as far as this kind of, you know, defensive liability, whether or not fans see it. I think it's going to be an adjustment. I think maybe there might be some resistance. Look, Miami is, at this point in time, still probably one of the more traditional teams in the league, considering they're starting Hassan Whiteside at the five. It's much more like a team from the 90s and early 2000s that has your prototypical center there. You know, you've got lineups in you know, Dallas, where Dirk Nowitzki starts at the five now. And that's because he's older, but, you know, he's not really equipped to handle the center position, but he's got some size. You know, this is a guy who played small forward and power forward for most of his career, and all of a sudden now he's guarding at the five. And I think that's just a trend that the league is going through as far as multiple teams are going to ultra small lineups. So maybe there's still an adjustment period from the fans' perspective as far as seeing Winslow kind of typically a small forward, perhaps even a shooting guard in some instances, all of a sudden being switched up to the four.
He would be, as a permanent four, he'd be the shortest power forward in the NBA. He does have a 6'10" wingspan, which is what you want, but he would be at this point the shortest power forward in the NBA.
Shorter than Draymond?
He is, I think, is technically an inch shorter than Draymond Green.
Oh, he's listed at 6'7", Draymond's 6'8", even though he's really 6'6".
Okay. Yeah, and Winslow might be 6'5", so I can't even get into that rabbit hole, right. But he would be, if not the, among the shortest power forwards in the NBA, and that is weird, but look, he's got the strength and he's got the length. I mean, like I said, 6'10" wingspan, that's great. So he could put his hands up and guard guys, and that works. And he played power forward at Duke. It worked well. He played next to Jahlil Okafor, and he was able to space the floor. He shot better from three-point range at Duke than he has so far in the NBA. But if he could start getting that going, he could be a really nice small ball stretch four type. Stretch four might not be the right word, but a small ball four. And look, the Heat play a switching defensive style anyway, so it's not like he's always going to be guarding fours. He might start on a four during at the beginning of a play, but end up on a two, end up on a five. You know, that's just like Hassan Whiteside might end up guarding a small forward. That's what's been happening in this preseason. They've switched basically everything defensively. Yeah. And so that's what you want. You're not looking so much in these days for one-on-one matchups. You're looking for a guy that can handle, can respectably handle several different matchups. And that's, like Jeff Nicholas said, that's the same sort of impact that Chris Bosh had. He wasn't always the best guarding a five one-on-one. You know, see Roy Hibbert for an example. But he could guard anybody between one and five credibly. And that's something that I think Winslow could do.
Now, if there's one difference in between the Bosch and Winslow comparison, it's that I think Bosch and Spoelstra were kind of setting the trend in that regard. They were forcing everybody to react to having Chris Bosch at the five, as opposed to maybe having Winslow at the four seems more reactionary rather than setting the trend.
That's a good point. Quick reminder before we move on with our other questions here. Make sure that you subscribe to David Locke's Locked On NBA podcast for all of your national NBA news throughout the season. He's got interviews with couches and coaches even. Maybe coaches on couches. Scouts and league insiders. Also check out what the rest of the Locked On podcast network has to offer, including the Locked On NBA channel, which gives you every Locked On podcast for all NBA teams in one feed right on your podcast app. Plus, Locked On Dolphins, who came away with a win today, or on Sunday. Against whoever we played, the Titans? Is that right?
I don't know. Sure, why not?
Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. There's a reason why we don't host Locked On Dolphins, so we don't know anything about them.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Well, we know about their O-line coach, that's for sure.
That's my favorite sports thing that's happened this season. It's so good.
I don't know.
I'm not condoning the behavior, but it is wildly entertaining. All right, next question. This comes from Lyle Yahweh. You guys are too critical of Hassan Whiteside, most of
them. Damn right.
That's it. That's the question. He goes, when he puts up a 15-footer, you say Heat fans are cringing, but I'm not, and I don't think most of us are. I like him taking that shot because he practices it. And shouldn't he be trying to take another step and evolve his game? I agree with him that he shouldn't shoot threes, though, because really, who is going to rebound them? And Whiteside did say that. Especially when he's such a good offensive rebounder. Just appreciate this man, and maybe his passing will improve. All right. Do you want to go in first, or should I?
there's a lot to break down here, right? I wonder if we're developing that reputation for being, quote-unquote, too critical of Hassan.
We've gotten a few comments that we are critical of Hassan. I mean, he is the best player on the team.
I think we're being fair, and I think that's part of the problem, then, is that we're not blinded by Whiteside's impact. I think he has liabilities, he has limitations, and I think the fact that we point those out doesn't necessarily mean that we're being critical. I think it's just more honest than anything else. But as far as his tendency to step out and whether or not that's something, another step in evolving his game, absolutely. That's a great point. It's unfortunately not at the point where it needs to be when he's taking those shots, and that's why we're critical of him taking those shots. Look, you know, the percentage of his field goals, let's say he shot 39.8% in between 10 and 16 feet away from the rim, according to Basketball Reference. That's not good. He shot 37% in between 16 feet and three-point range. Again, not good. So he's shooting these at an average of, say, 38% between 16 feet and three-point range. That is not a very good percentage for a player on the floor right now. And now, obviously, you want a more of a stretch five, somebody out there to be able to knock those shots down. There are several examples throughout the league. Karl Anthony Towns, for example, between 10 and 16 feet, he shoots at 47.3%. Between 16 and 3%, 3%, 41.6%. Anthony Davis, 46.7 between 10 and 16 feet, 41.4 between 16 and 3-point range. Nikola Jokic, between 10 and 16 feet, he shoots at a 53% rate.
Well, he's a top 10 player ever. Can't compare him to Nikola Jokic.
Okay, so maybe that comparison isn't fair.
But Anthony Davis and Carl Anthony Towns are fine comparisons.
Okay, but the point is, Hassan isn't knocking these down at the kind of rate that he needs to in order to be able to take those effectively and frequently.
He makes one out of every three, which is enough for most fans to be like, oh, okay. But you're exactly right. You've got to be at the 45% mark or somewhere around that in order to start taking mid-range shots. I don't care what position you play, right? Otherwise, it's a waste. And to be honest, I'd rather Whiteside take threes than 15-footers. I'll be completely. He's got as much of a chance as hitting threes as 50. If he's hitting a 15-footer at a 30% clip, he can hit threes at that same clip. I have no doubt he could hit threes at a 30% rate. Probably a better shooter than Justice Winslow at this point. But it's, and at least you're rewarded with an extra point when you make it. And look, I don't care about the rebounds. If he misses a three, you're going to get a long rebound anyway. And you've got guys like Winslow and James Johnson, Ronnie Magruder on the floor anyway, who are going to fight for rebounds. I have no problem with it. I don't like the mid-range shots. I don't like the mid-range shots from anybody. It's nothing personal or specific to Whiteside. Like I said earlier, Miami's number one in mid-range shot attempts this preseason. That is awful. They should not be doing that. And Whiteside is a big culprit for why that number is up, because he's taken a ton of mid-range jumpers during the I don't want that. If you're taking a mid-range jumper, either step out to the three-point line or force the issue and get to the rim. If you're, for me, Whiteside should be passing the ball or trying to get to the rim when he's at the when he's in that 15-foot range. That's why we're having a problem with it. And look, Eric Spoelstra has, even this preseason, Spoelstra has said, you know, you could point to a lot of young guys on this roster, but I still think Hassan Whiteside has the highest ceiling of anybody on this team. And that's saying a lot, because Whiteside's a borderline all-star, probably should be all-star. So if we're critical of him, it's only because we think he could be better. It's not because we think he's bad. It's just because there is so much natural talent there that he shouldn't be settling for those jumpers. We think that Whiteside can be a lot better than even he is now. And I at least that's what I think.
I agree.
And look, maybe there's places that he needs to improve to get better. And one of those is stop taking stupid shots. Don't settle for mid-range jumpers. Stop taking those dumb hook shots. And just, you know, one of the things with Whiteside is his shot selection needs to improve. And that's always been the case for like the last 3 years. And that's still the case. And that's evident from this preseason. So that's where we're coming from. So I don't think we're too critical. I think you're right, David. I think we're just trying to be fair. And we just want to see more from this guy, because we think, if anything, I think our opinions of him and what he can be is higher than what most people think.
I think maybe, you know, there's probably a little bit of a novelty aspect to when he hits those shots. I think Miami fans are probably very much ingrained in having a strong center position there, which I think is part of the reason why they love Whiteside as much as they do, is because this is a team that throughout its history has always had a strong player at center. You know, there was Ronnie Cicely there, even Kevin Willis, a historically good big man, then Alonzo Mourning, then Shaquille O'Neal. And then you start to struggle a little bit there during the big three era. But I think that's what we need to look at as far as the role model for the center position moving forward. It should be more Chris Bosh, less Hassan Whiteside, or less, you know, Alonzo Mourning, et cetera. And I think that's fine. I'd like him to be a more effective player. I think also when he takes those shots, to me anyway, it's more often either he's taking it too early in the shot clock, or he's taking it late in the shot clock because he's held the ball for too long and he isn't passing the ball, as you pointed out. You know, it stops the offense. It stops the flow of the ball. And that's completely against everything that works so well for this team. And that's why the shot is more the result of a very bad decision on his part. And we've seen too many bad decisions from him early on. And you know, it's part of the maturity issue that he'll be tied to for the rest of his career. Whether it's overstated or not at this point, who knows? You know, there's still evidence of it here and there. I think he'd like to be able to mature past that once and for all. And part of that is having a finely tuned offensive game that works well within the flow and context of how everybody else on the floor is playing and scoring. So that's an important distinction for him to make, and he still needs to make it.
Our next question comes from Ethan Huffman. It's a hypothetical trade because we love hypotheticals. The Heat get... It's the one between the Heat and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Heat get Mirza Teletovic and Gary Payton II. Bucks get Tyler Johnson and Wayne Ellington. Here's Ethan's explanation. The Bucks are set up to absorb Tyler Johnson's salary increase because Greg Monroe's contract expires after the season, and Teletovic's $10 million is getting sent to Miami. Tyler Johnson and Ellington provide backcourt shooting that the Bucks need. TJ's skill set is ideal for playing along somebody like Giannis. Teletovic for the Heat could be a Luke Babbitt type, but ideally less minutes because Justice Winslow and James Johnson would be the main power forwards. Overall, $10 million is less than $20 million, and it's expiring next season. Gary Payton II looks like a really solid athlete and continues the Payton tradition in Miami. What do you think, David?
It makes sense. Just from the aspect of trying to move those salaries, something that we were concerned with, but at the same time, Teletovic, I mean, there's just absolutely no impact that I see him having here in Miami. He's just a very low ceiling guy at this point. No upside to acquiring him. And, you know, you're giving up a lot, I think, in Tyler Johnson and Ellington's shooting. You know, he's struggled in the preseason, but we both expect him to put up some decent numbers next year. So you're giving up quite a bit just to move that $10 million. And unless it's part of another move where you're acquiring another player or you're positioning yourself in free agency to sign another player, I just look at it as a giving up a substantial amount of talent there.
Yeah, you know, there's a kind of a reaction to look at Tyler Johnson's contract next year where he's going to be getting paid $19 million and he'll be the second highest paid player on the Heat next year. Right. And there's this reaction, I think, among Heat fans and trade machine aficionados to say, well, the Heat got to dump that. Right. But you've got to get value in return. And Teletovic and Gary Payton II, it's just not enough value. Neither of them is as good as Tyler Johnson. They don't have the ceiling that Tyler Johnson has. I like Gary Payton II. I liked him. I think he played at Oregon State, and I liked him then. Oh. I just don't know what kind of NBA potential he has. And right. Wayne Ellington, he's not yet 30 years old. He's got plenty of years left of knockdown three-point shooting. You're just not getting the value in return. I'm not willing to just part with Tyler Johnson just because he's going to get paid so much money next year for that much less value. Now, if the Bucks start incorporating first-round picks and stuff like that and sweeten it that way, then maybe we can have that conversation. But just that deal, I want more value from Tyler Johnson. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. If you trade Tyler Johnson's $19 million, you're not getting $19 million in cap room next year if you're the Heat. Getting what comes out to between $6 and $7 million in cap space because Miami is already over the cap with only 9 guaranteed contracts next year. You still have to sign 6 other NBA players, and ideally you want to do that with more than one, you know, cap exception and minimum contracts, but that's really where the Heat are right now. And since they're already over the cap, you take the difference between that and trading Tyler Johnson's contract, and you're only getting about $6 to $7 million in cap room. You're not getting $19 million in cap room. So you're not getting max player salary cap room, cap space. That's just not how the math works. So at this point, trading Tyler Johnson for $6 million in cap room, which basically does nothing for you, that doesn't seem worth it to me. I'd rather just keep Tyler Johnson and just pay the $19 million at this point. It's not my money. I don't care where the money's going. It's just not worth that. It's not worth losing what Tyler Johnson brings to the table as a potential six-man of the year candidate for $6 million worth of cap room. All right, Chris Leach asks, Chris got two questions in. I just noticed that. Good job, Chris. It seemed like during the second preseason game, the Heat used way more pick and rolls with Whiteside, and he ended up playing great. Do you think that this will become more of a focus, as last year they seemed to shy away from that a bit? And to Chris's point, that seemed like the case. He sent this after the second preseason game, and in the third preseason game, they were also running a lot of pick and rolls for Whiteside. So this is a trend in the preseason, and it's a favorable one. It's a positive one. You and I were just talking about Whiteside's shot decision-making, and it is a lot of post-ups. It is a lot of weird mid-rangey, funky jumpers. But if they could get him the ball as the roll man on the pick and roll more, then that keeps him satisfied as far as the points that he's getting, as far as the touches that he's getting on the offensive end, and it's just way more efficient.
Um, I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like against Orlando, I think it's probably more a result of the fact that he was being guarded by, you know, Nick Vucevic, who's not much of a defensive center there. So maybe it frees him up a little bit to be more creative on offense because he's not really being guarded by a prototypical, you know, a defensive rim protecting type center. So maybe that's an example of it. But, you know, as you pointed out, it's been something that we've seen in other preseason games too. I don't know. How do you think it fits into the kind of drive and kick offense that we saw last year? Do you think it could be another component of that? Do you think it maximizes how Whiteside fits into that kind of offense? I'm curious. I just don't know what kind of an impact it'll hold.
You know, if it's consistent, it just increases. It improves the spacing. You know, that's what, you know, people are calling vertical spacing nowadays.
Right.
Where you have to have a defender at least somewhere near the rim in order to account for that potential option, you know, in order to account for Whiteside rolling to the rim. And so when that's the case, that might free up guys at the 3-point line. And, you know, players have to play up on Whiteside in order to try to guard him from just having a free roll at the rim and gaining momentum and getting ahead of steam towards the rim. At that point, he's unstoppable, right? So, yeah. You know, that's also in that respect, freeing up the space near the rim, which allows guys like Dragic and Waiters to drive and kick. So to me, this is the perfect example of Hassan Whiteside. It's the perfect use of Hassan Whiteside, because if you could just have him rolling to the rim a la DeAndre Jordan, where Doc Rivers has said in the past, I don't run plays for DeAndre Jordan. And DeAndre Jordan did almost leave Dallas because the Clippers weren't running plays for him, and Dallas was like, oh, we'll run plays for you. But he eventually went back to the Clippers. We all know that whole saga. But, you know, Whiteside, they don't have to worry about that. Whiteside's locked into his contract. He seems happy as long as he's doing things defensively and getting recognized for it and getting touches in general on the offensive end. So if they can get him rolling to the rim more, it's just a way more efficient use of Whiteside's abilities. And I think so far in the preseason, James Johnson has struggled a bit, but he does also seem like the best pick and roll partner for Whiteside, which is really interesting if that 4-5 pick and roll is a new tool for them to use. Because Dragic and Waiters have never really figured out that chemistry with Whiteside. You remember Dwayne Wade a couple years ago when Whiteside was first kind of getting going with the Heat? They established this incredible pick and roll chemistry, and it's not something that any player has been able to fill the void since Wade left. But if James Johnson can kind of do it, it does seem like there's some chemistry there, that there's an understanding of how James Johnson wants to pass the ball and how Whiteside's going to roll to the rim. If that becomes this interesting little wrinkle in Miami's offense now with James Johnson as the presumable starter, I think that's going to be incredibly valuable. So, our next question comes from Eddie, who also uses the hashtag AskLOHeat on Twitter. I saw Hassan Whiteside move the ball a little bit more in the game against Orlando, and he looked engaged on both ends of the floor. Is this the season where we'll see more consistent play from Hassan after he has a season of being more of a focal point on the offense? So he's referring to last season, where he was in a large part the focal point of the offense, especially in the first half of the year. I've noticed that too. He's passed the ball a little bit more. I don't think it's a... Well, he's still not Kelly Olynyk as far as passing the ball is, but he does seem a little bit more willing. But I also think, look, I've always, I don't necessarily think it's a willingness issue with Hassan Whiteside. I think it's an ability issue. I think he'd be willing to pass the ball more if he just saw guys that were open. I think he lacks court vision, and that's fine because he's a center. Point guards are the players that have to have court vision. I just think he has a fundamental lack of court vision, and he really only tends to pass to guys when they're cutting right in front of him, which has happened a number of times this preseason, and it's been a small sample size, which might be the reason it seems like he's more willing to pass it. I might be wrong on this, David, but I think it's an ability issue, not necessarily a willingness issue.
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I don't know that I've ever given it any thought as to whether or not it's ability versus... I just know he doesn't do it or hasn't done it very much. I always felt like it was a willingness one.
I think that's partly it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair. I don't know if there's a percentage there. From my perspective, it's probably higher than it is for you, and that's fine. I mean, He's made passes in the past, sharp ones. So I think that's why the ability is clearly there. It's just maybe he doesn't see them as clearly as we'd like him to. And hopefully there's a possibility that he'll make that evolution this year. And I think he needs to. I think if we've seen that kind of evidence in the preseason, we definitely need him to be able to take that step up, because I think Miami's offense overall will improve so much more greatly with him making passes like that. We've seen how Olynyk adds another dimension there, and I think that's a good example for Whiteside to emulate there. And I tend to think that Whiteside is a little too proud to say, oh, well, you know, Olynyk is a guy who can pass. I should be a guy who can pass as well. Hopefully he sees that there's an impact, a positive one there, and maybe he'll try to incorporate that into his game a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, look, the other part of it is he genuinely believes that he can make that 15-footer, right? So that's why he takes that shot instead of passing the ball, right? He thinks that it's the best option for the offense. So it's not coming out of a place where I don't think he's a ball hog necessarily. I just think he believes that I can make this shot. It's better for the team if I make this shot. I'm going to take this shot right now, you know? And he believes, as we know, he believes in his hook shot. He believes in his post game, which isn't necessarily that good. And so he thinks that that's probably the best thing for the offense. And that's fine. You know, if you're a 7-footer traditional center, those are the moves that you want to be in the post. But the NBA has long since moved away from the post game. But that's why it's as a traditional center, that's how you score. I wish he was a little bit more willing of a passer. I do think that there's an ability issue. I just don't think he sees guys. Maybe he's just not looking for it. It's just that every time he passes the ball, it seems like the guy's like right next to him, and so it's easy to spot that player, his teammate. So,
but isn't that a criticism then, or no? Isn't that a fair criticism then, that if he actually believes that shot is the best thing for the offense, that he's just simply delusional?
100%.
And that's a problem. If you have a guy out there that's like stagnating the offense and taking poor quality shots that he connects with at a very low rate, that's a problem. And I don't know that that's, you know, it's part of the issue with Hassan, is that I don't know that anybody really gets through to him sometimes. And I know, you know, that maybe it comes across to some of our listeners as being a little critical, but I think that's just the reality, is that Hassan went in there. He's a great success story. Everybody loves that wonderful positive narrative of the success story, that he, you know, he was playing in Gastonia, North Carolina, YMCA, and then all of a sudden he gets a call from the Heat and manages to work his way up there. And he seemed to fit so perfectly with that broken season after Chris Bosh went down, et cetera. He's the $98 million man. He's gone paid, et cetera. It's a great story. That doesn't mean that he's perfect, and I think he's far from that. And I think there are issues there, and one of them happens to be a psychological one.
I wonder if it's a coaching thing. It's at this point you've got to be able to convince Whiteside, hey, this isn't what's best for the team. This is not what's best for the offense. You need to pass the ball from here, and maybe that's something they've tried to do. I'm not saying it's not, but I also wonder, given Whiteside's ego, given that he wants to genuinely contribute to the offense in that way, where he believes that he can make those shots, right, I wonder if that's just something that Spoelstra is willingly giving up, where Spoelstra knows that that's not the best use of Whiteside and that's not the best result of an offense or a play. But he's like, look, I empower a free flow motion offense. I empower guys like Wayne Ellington to shoot 10 threes a game. I empower somebody like James Johnson to come in here and suddenly just do whatever he wants offensively, where, in, like, for example, Toronto, he was relegated to just being a corner three specialist. I empower guys like Justice Winslow to handle the ball and facilitate the offense. I can't also, in good conscience, tell Whiteside that you can't take 15-footers. I can't, in good conscience, tell Whiteside that he needs to pass the ball more instead of taking the shots that he wants to take and experiment in the way that he wants to experiment, when I'm allowing it from basically all of my other players. I wonder if that's part of it.
It's possible. I mean, like, it's a lot of what the challenge is as coaching is managing egos and understanding there's a give and take there. You can't be the kind of hard-ass coach from days gone by that, you know, dictated everything and was viewed as the sole voice in the locker room. That's no longer the case. You have to understand how to work well with others and have to get the most out of every player that you have on the roster. And that's one of Spoelstra's strengths.
Yeah.
It's probably
If the downside of Whiteside not taking those shots, right, because there's always unintended consequences, if the downside is that Whiteside's grumpy and unhappy, then let him take the – I don't care. Let him do whatever he wants offensively, because we know one thing about Whiteside. When he's happy and when he's engaged, he is by far the best version of himself. And when he's not engaged and when he's unhappy, he's a negative. So I'd rather him just take those couple of shots and you know, maybe – look, if he could find joy out of passing the ball a little bit more, that would be great. But if it's not the case, it's not the case, which is, again, I don't think that's the case. I do think it's more of an ability issue, but that's just me. I don't know anything. Taylor Monk asks, also using the hashtag AskLOHeat, Josh Richardson's stat line was amazing on Saturday. Do you guys think that we'll see more of that this season on a consistent basis? So stat line on Saturday against Orlando. 19 points, 4 assists, 2 rebounds, 1 block, 4 steals. Shooting-wise, 7 of 13 from the field, 3 of 4 from 3-point range. He did this all in 29 minutes. It was really impressive in that Orlando game. On a broader scale, has been great throughout the entire preseason. Josh Richardson has been the most impressive player this preseason for the Heat. I think he's ready for a breakout year. What do you think, David?
I think it's certainly a possibility. I think it's one that we've hoped about when we talked about him during our player previews last week. He certainly has shown some real upside there. I was concerned about his overall size and athleticism. Not athleticism necessarily, like his size. I wonder if he had put enough on enough weight to kind of handle the wear and tear of the season. But at least for now, it seems like he's really been much more explosive than everybody out there. And it just might be a conditioning thing. It might be an effort thing. It might be a combination of many factors. But right now, you're absolutely right. I think he looks great out there. Now, we have to, you know, point out that a lot of those numbers were due to the fact that Goran Dragic didn't play. And so Richardson had the ball in his hands a lot. Mm-hmm. Something you've talked about, him being a more effective playmaker, and it seemed like he certainly thrived in that role against Orlando. You know, Deion struggled a little bit. I mean, finished with 17 points, actually shot fairly well, 5-9. But, you know, I think Josh just had the ball in his hands a lot, was able to kind of see what he wanted to do with it, and had the explosive ability to try and get to the rim whenever he wanted to against Orlando's defenders.
He just looks way more comfortable with the ball in his hands. So even if he's not handling the ball as much as he did in that Orlando game, if he's doing it at a smaller scale, I still think he's going to be effective at it. He might not end up with, what was it, 4 assists and 19 points?
Yeah.
But he might end up with 2 assists and 12 points. But extremely efficient still, you know, and that where Dragic is also having a great game. And I'm fine with that. I think, you know, Richardson, one of the things we wanted him to improve on was facilitating and handling the ball, because we knew he would be asked to do that with the Heat not having a traditional backup point guard. So he, Deion Waiters, Tyler Johnson, they're all going to be kind of, you know, the de facto backup point guards at different points during a game when Dragic isn't on the floor. Richardson's doing a lot of that in the preseason. He isn't starting at small forward like you and I had thought he would. Magruder is starting at the small forward, but that allows Richardson to come in off the bench and play a number of different positions and just be a little bit more of a versatile player, which he has in 3 preseason games, small sample size, fully embraced. And I've just been... And just defensively, he's been absolutely disruptive, and we can't say enough of what he's been doing defensively, just creating turnovers and having those turnovers lead to offense, because he's able to just grab the ball and bring it down the floor and find open teammates who are cutting to the basket or leaking out for threes. He's been by far the just most impressive player during the Heat's preseason so far. I'm really excited for what he's going to do this year. You know, it might not be at the scale that what he's done during the preseason. He's not going to be scoring 19 points a game, but he's going to have games where he does, and that's going to be huge. This is a deep Heat team. They're going to need somebody to step up every game, because they don't have that one all-star. They don't have LeBron James. They don't have Kevin Durant that could just carry an offense night in and night out. So, but they have depth, and every night somebody is going to have to step up. And there's going to be, I think, several nights where Josh Richardson's that guy. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. That does it for the mailbag questions. Thanks to everybody who sent them in using the hashtag AskLOHeat on Twitter or by email, as always, lockedonheat@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Theme song is by CeeLo Keys. Outro music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.